Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
All right. We're all set. Levels are checked. Talent is ready in the booth. All right, don't forget your three S's, Jim. Star, smile, strong. Okay, here we go. Three, two, one. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. Hey, it's Jim Toronto, and welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNplus.com, another episode, a new episode, is posted every Monday at WGNplus.com. And don't forget my landing page. You go to WGNplus.com, you go to the entertainment prompt, and there you will find Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. You press on that. And you will find all previous 116 episodes, which can only mean one thing. This is episode 117. Wow. How about that, huh? Ain't that wild? Welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for clicking on, scrolling, scanning. What else could you possibly do? What do you do on Tinder? You swipe? Not that I would know. Whatever it is, whatever device you use, whatever gesture you use, whatever command you use, I thank you for using those, implementing those, that's a better word, implementing whatever command you use and whatever device is your preference that helped you find this podcast today. 117. Yes, yes, yes. As I like to do on the podcast, I like to share some of the trials and tribulations of this life that is called the life of Elton Jim. I promise you folks, I am not making any of this up. If I did, I would be one of the greatest tragic writers since Shakespeare. In reality, I must be one of the most, flexible people to be able to keep coming back from some of these crazy incidents that happened to me. Thankfully, none of them are very serious. They're just little irritating obstacles, but I do seem to have a lot of little irritating obstacles. I don't know if they're created or if I'm just observing them or if just fate is dealing me this hand, but I certainly have learned how to bounce back. But I love to share these with you, and I know that you enjoy hearing about my latest trials and tribulations. Maybe they make you feel better. I don't know. But I always enjoy sharing them with you. And so I've got another one. Freshly baked, right out of the oven. So, I may have even talked about this a previous time, but it happened again. But there is a silver lining to this story. There is actually an ending here, which, I'll be honest, and I always am, I didn't have this ending just 24 hours ago. I did not have the ending. I was going to tell this story anyway, but now, I've mentioned to you before, I love being a detective. I remember several podcasts ago, I talked to you about how to find, you know, my detective skills in finding lost things, of tracing back your steps before you lost something to the most, you know, meticulous degree to find what you lost. And yes, I know the old joke, it's always the last place you looked. Yes, because why would you look after you found it? I get the joke. But as I said, I'm a big fan of Columbo, the TV show Columbo. And I think that show helped sharpen my detective skills and my skills of deduction. I'm also somewhat fan of Sherlock Holmes. A friend of mine, Tony, is a huge, huge fan, and he's sort of passed that on to me a bit in some of his stories. And I've watched the Sherlock show, Sherlock with Benedict Cumberbatch, Sherlock. That's the way Alan Cummings introduces the show. So welcome to this episode of Sherlock. He's very Scottish. But anyway, as I said, I like to think that I've got some pretty good deductive skills. And when I can't put them to use, I do enjoy it. I don't like to have to put those deductive skills to work as much as I have, because it means that there is some kind of a mystery to be solved. And life has enough dramas, you know. But I may have shared this mystery with you maybe a year or so ago. And but that time it had an unsatisfying ending. But now I know I have solved the mystery. And yes, with a little luck and a little deductive skill, I believe I have solved the mystery. And even this time, with the help of my own Watson, if you're going to call me Sherlock Holmes, my own Watson helped me out. My wife, Elton Jamie, it was a key to solving this mystery. So we're like Nancy Drew, Sherlock Holmes, or Columbo and Nancy Drew, or who did Angela Lansbury play on Murder, She Wrote? But I think the Watson and Sherlock analogy apply. But she wasn't initially involved in the mystery, but she certainly did play a major role in solving it. Just yesterday, perfect timing. So as I said, I may have told you this before, about a year ago, I went out to my garage to go in my car and go somewhere, and the car was completely dead. I mean, the battery was completely dead. There was not an ounce of energy or power flowing through that car. Thankfully, the door was open. And so I just got in as I would all the time. I didn't have to hit my little lock fob on the car because the door was open. And I'm sure I did hit the fob. Didn't notice that the lights didn't flash, what they usually do. And then I went to the door and it opened. So I just sat down as I usually do. And when I pressed the start button for the car, it was completely dead. Absolutely nothing. Couldn't figure out what it was. Went online, tried to read. Why would my car be dead? There was no lights left on. Why did this car suck up energy like that? Don't know why. But I have one of those services, you know, that they come out and will give you a jump start. So I called them. And the cool part of this, because don't forget, my car was in my garage. The hood of the car was at the back of the garage. So I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this is going to be a mishigas here, because how are we going to push the car out in order for the car, the tow truck, to give me a jump with all the cables and everything? Usually, you know, the cars are right next to one another. The cables aren't that long. I don't know how we're going to move this car. Are we going to have to tow it out? I mean, I've got all these scenarios, and as I said, that's how I am. I am very anal when it comes to these, and that's a polite word for what I am. So I've had all these scenarios. Oh, this is going to be such a pain in the butt, but what am I going to do? And much to my surprise and much to my happiness, when the guy came out to jump the car, he just had this little suitcase of a charger. I had never seen one of these before. Thankfully, I haven't had a lot of problems up to this point with my batteries in my car, so I didn't know of the new technology. In my world, you always had jumper cables. You always had a tow truck that jumped you, or you always had a friend in you. And I've got jumper cables in the back of my car, although I doubt if I know how to use them. Because, as I proved once again, even with this situation, my motto, as you know, gang, call the guy. CTG, call the guy. And so I called the guy, and he came with this little kind of suitcase looking thing, opened the hood, attached it, told me to start the car. Boom. Car started. Obviously, it was the battery, which I figured it was, because as I said, there was no juice at all in the car. Even the little flashing red light that shows the car alarm would be on was off. There was nothing. Completely dead. Couldn't figure out why. Didn't leave a light on. Hoped that the car, there wasn't some kind of a malfunction with the car, that it was just, you know, feeding off the battery and losing power, because what if I thankfully wasn't in my home? Yes, I do have this service that I, as part of my car package. And but that's an inconvenience. Still takes an hour or so, for, if not more, for someone to come out. And, you know, God forbid you're on the side of a road, or it's midnight, or who knows where you are when this happens. So I was lucky that at least it happened in my garage and the car was there. That was about a year and a half ago. Never really figured out what happened. Remained something of a mystery, and remained a little kind of an anxiety for me every time I would get into the car or go out to the car. Every time I pressed that key fob, I was keeping my fingers crossed. Oh my gosh, especially if you're in a hurry. I mean, most times, you know, you plan your day, you plan your time that you would just get in the car and leave. You don't plan, let me give myself another 2 hours before I'm supposed to leave to get there in case my car doesn't start. We usually don't do that. We're assuming our car is going to start. But there was always a little tension, a little apprehension, a little fear every time I'd hit my fob. It wasn't major anxiety, but there was when it beeped and the back lights went on and flashed and I heard that the car opened, I certainly was glad that happened. But there was always this little sense, this little apprehension every time I would open the door. I hope whatever happened didn't happen again and the juice was gone in my car. But it's been over a year. Nothing happened. A repeat never occurred. And so as time went on, that apprehension left. And I was back to just hitting the fob, expecting the car to open. It did. And off we went. Until last week. And it was something of an ironic, symmetrical situation in that I'm talking about it here, sort of on the radio, if you will, a podcast. I was going to the radio station, WGN, to do a fill-in shift from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. And so this was last week. And I was filling in, as I said, for the 1 to 5 a.m. shift. So I left my house around 11:30 to get down to the station and get prepared for the show. And it's 11:30. It's, you know, it's dark. It's late. I'm just starting my day, if you will. Most people are sleeping. It's Friday night. And I walk out. Open the garage door, hit the fob, and Carr is dead. I noticed that, wait a minute, I didn't hear the click. I didn't see the lights flash. Oh my gosh. What? Don't tell me. I mean, I've got to be downtown. I've got a show to do. I can't wait for someone to jump my car. And, what am I going to do? So suddenly now panic is instilled because I've got to be somewhere. I'm once again baffled by why this car is dead, why there is absolutely no juice again. And how am I going to get down to the show, which is only an hour and a half from now? Now, thankfully, my wife has a car, and so I figured I would take her car. But then it dawned on me that my security pass to get into the building at WGN was in my car. I keep it in my car sometimes, so this way I won't forget it, because I need that to get into the building and up the elevator and into the door. Very secure building. You need that pass. And it's stuck in my car. So yes, I can get to the station using my wife's car, no problem there, but how am I going to get into the car and especially or into the building, especially at 11:30? Yes, there are usually security guards there, but there's a skeleton crew. I'll have to call upstairs to a producer or an engineer upstairs and have them come down and, oh, another mishigas. And look that up. That's a Yiddish term, folks. And I'm like, oh, I at the very least, okay, the car is not doing any harm. It's sitting in the garage. Fine. I've got another mode of transportation, my wife's car. Yes, I'm irritated and I'm kind of baffled as to why this happened, but I can put that on hold because I've got other pressing things ahead of me. I could take care of the car tomorrow. It's still going to linger in my mind, but at least I've got another mode of transportation. But now I have this new obstacle, this new irritant that I've left the pass in the car. How am I going to get into the car? Because this time my door was not open. And I had read online that sometimes if you leave your door open, not wide open, but not even unlocked, that maybe that takes juice from the car. I don't know if that's true or not. I mean, you go online, you read so many wives' tales, but one thing's for sure, I always lock my car at night now. Always have, in case you forget whatever reason, but I make a point of locking. So this exact thing, if that's what caused it, of draining my battery, that will never happen again. So I did the right thing, locked my car the night before, and that was the safe thing to do. But now it's keeping me out of the inside of my car, which made me realize, yes, you know, this is these electric locks are very convenient, no question, very nice feature. But what happens when there's no electricity? Your car is sealed. And so now I'm, you know, and in those good old days, there used to be the little knob on your lock where you could use a hanger. Well, those days are gone. So now, once again, you know, time is ticking away. I'm trying to find a solution. I'm also looking at my watch saying I need to get downtown. It's going to take me a while to get there and park and get into the building and prepare. So and all this is starting to weigh on me, but I want that pass. I don't want to go down there without that pass, so I'm trying to think of a way and get in the car without doing anything drastic, obviously. So then I remember that, you know, they usually give you a valet key. You know, when you get a new car, they give you that valet key that allows you to, if you don't want to take your key off your keychain and you are valeting the car, or it's an extra key, right? And they used to give you that valet key that would sometimes just open the door, you know, and start the car or something like that, you know. So I know, I look on the driver's side and there is a lock on the handle. So I know there's a key because they give you some kind of a key to get in for just these you know, situations. But now it's quarter to 12, quarter to midnight. I'm in my mind is racing because I want to get down. I'm upset this is happening. So all that's happening, the frustration, the anticipation, the apprehension, all of it is just one big soup. And so then I go downstairs in the basement to where all my, in the little pouch that they give you when you buy a car. I mean, the car's 2 years old, but, you know, a lot of times I put everything in this little pouch for safekeeping. So I'm like, well, maybe the valet key is in there. Worst scenario, of course, it's probably in my car. I probably put it with the owner's manual and stuff in the car, which isn't going to help me. So once again, I'm really feeling like, oh, that pass is, I really want that pass. So I don't have to go through a lot of this this BS when I get to the station, but I don't think I'm going to get it because now the key is probably in the car. And of course I go now and I find the pouch that I have in the basement and it's not there. So I'm very frustrated. I'm ready to take my wife's car and go down and then have to deal with not having a pass and having to prove that I work at WGN on the shift and have call somebody up and, oh, this pain in the butt. And then, thankfully, Elton Jamie, because I was running through the house and she was actually sleeping, it was 11:30 when all this started, and she came out to the, you know, garage and we're looking around. I'm mentioning this key, and finally she says, wait a minute, isn't the key in your fob now? And I'm like, oh, that's right. That spare key, they don't even give you that anymore, I don't think. If they do, I don't know. But yes, the spare key to that lock of your door is in your fob. Now, I remembered that. I knew that. But at the time, I mean, once again, I haven't used this. I haven't had the need to use it. So it wasn't top of the mind. I certainly will never forget it from now on. But that's the kind of thing that you forget. But thankfully, despite her grogginess, she remembered that. Wait a minute, isn't your key in the fob? Yes, it is. Eureka. I might be able to get in. So now the key is, no pun intended, how do I get the key out of that fob? You know, so I'm immediately just pressing it, which is not the way. And pulling on it, it's not the way. It's what you do if you know. And people are probably out there screaming, Jim, the key is in the fob. The key is in the fob. I know. We figured it out. And now you're probably saying, Jim, you have to press the little button on the back of the fob. Because if you knew that the key was there, you'd know how to pull it out. But I was in, as I said, kind of panic mode. Wasn't thinking clear. So then finally I said, wait a minute. Isn't there some little, you know, little release button on the back? Yes, there was. I pressed the release button, pulled the fob, the key out. Ah, I heard a choir of angels. Ah, there's the key. I put the key in and I get my ID, my security pass. So at least some of my panic is gone. I'm still bothered why the heck this car is out of juice and what's causing it. Is there a defect in this car? Am I going to have to take the car in? You know, but at least one obstacle at a time. I have a way to get downtown with my wife's car, and thanks to my wife remembering that the key is in the fob, I was able to get in the car and get the pass. Once I even got in the car, car is dead. There is no juice in that car at all. It is just a black block. So that's still bugging me, but first things first, go do your show. Deal with it tomorrow morning, which, you know, I have to do, but at least it's not the best way you want to start your Saturday morning. But, you know, the trooper that you are, Jim, go do your show. So I went and did the show, got done at 5 a.m. But of course, I mean, I looked to see, and I had 24-hour service on that, you know, with this package to get the with the jump. And so I'm like, okay, I'm going to wait until about 7:30. And I'm calling up. I want to get this done. I want to get that. I want to make sure that the car definitely is, it's just the battery, which I'm pretty sure it is. But I just want to get this taken care of. I don't want to be this lingering on a Saturday. I'm calling them at 7 o'clock, and this guy's going to come at 8 or 8:30. I'm going to get this done, you know. So that's what I did. And it did take about an hour. And thankfully, as I said, the car was in the garage, so no big deal. And so the guy came once again with the little handy suitcase. Now, of course, I'm a pro at this. I know he's got the suitcase, so of course I'm acting like I'm, you know, oh yes, yeah. I see you've got the portable charger. Great, because you know the car is the front of the car is in the you know, the back of the garage. You can't pull it out, and then of course there's this little piece that makes it even more. Of course, nothing could be easy in my world. There's this overhanging storage kind of space that was built like a big shelf, a giant shelf that hangs from the wall of the garage and from the ceiling that you can put stuff in as well. So you're not putting everything on the ground. It's elevated. And when I park my car in the left side of the garage, my hood is partially under that. So of course, when you pick up the hood, it hits the bottom of this elevated structure, the storage structure. So we couldn't open the hood the entire way up, but thankfully we could open up it enough that we could, you know, use the jumper cable. So I am now not pulling as far back as I usually do, just in case this happens again. But I don't think it's going to happen again, because as I said, I believe I solved the mystery. So took 2 seconds, you know, he puts the clamps on the two spots. I'm not sure. I should have looked where he did it so I would know. I know you're supposed to put it on one of the things on the battery, and then somewhere you're supposed to ground it on some piece of metal. I don't know where. When I open up the hood of a car, that might as well be a jungle, a forest. I have no idea of my way around. One of the great mysteries to me is the inside of a car. Opening the hood for me is purely cosmetic. I can fill the water. I could fill the it's not even water, right? I could fill the fluid for your windshield wipers, and I know where the distributor cap is, and I know sometimes you can take that off and it will be hot, so you don't grab that. And you could pour water in that if you're overheating. I sort of know that. And I sort of know where to put oil or to check the oil. I used to do that too sometimes. But aside from the basics, I have no idea how an engine works. I have no idea what the different pieces look like. As I've said many times, my dad was not a putterer. My dad was not a mechanic. He didn't sit there on Saturdays and fix the car. He didn't, you know. He passed his genetic code to me, definitely, because he used to call the guy. And that is now a Toronto tradition. He was not a putterer, and he passed his non-puttering ways on to me. And I accepted them without any argument. And so, as I said, I don't putter. I don't really fix. I can fix a few things, but when it comes to a car, I don't futz with that. But anyway, the guy came, took 2 seconds. Car started up immediately, and the alarm was going off. Once the car started. But interestingly, which I don't know if this was noticed the last time, but the mechanic or the guy that came here to help me jumpstart the car, I said, well, he said, well, once, he goes, once you, this car starts, we will see what was left on. A light or something had to be left on, unless you haven't used the car in a month. And I said, no, I just used it. Now, I didn't use it all day, the day before. And that's another reason why I wasn't aware until 11:30 that the car was dead. I had used it the night before, but I didn't use it the whole rest of the day until I was using it at 11:30. So I had no idea that the battery was dead until I went out to use the car at 11:30. If I had, I would have noticed this earlier and I wouldn't have been in such a panic. So clearly something happened from 11:30, about 11 o'clock the night before, till 11:30 when I went out on Friday night. So from Thursday night at 11 till Friday night at 11:30, something happened that caused my battery to completely drain and die. So I'm not sure what that was. But, and I said, I'm looking around, I said, I didn't turn an inside light on. I didn't leave the lights on. I didn't leave the doors open. Nothing. What could have done this? I didn't leave anything on. I didn't do anything goofy or stupid or careless. I locked my doors. The lights went out. The car, when I left that car on Thursday night, it was fine. There was no reason for this. And now this is the second time this has happened to me. And I'm, as I said, I'm wondering if this is some kind of weird car malfunction with my car. Because why is this happening? So even though, you know, I know it's the battery and it turned on immediately. So that was fine. There wasn't anything more. The mystery still remained as to why was this car seemingly just draining for no reason. The second time. So when I turned the car on, the guy looked around and we looked and he said, well, no, I don't see the light, you know. But then he noticed, aha, my hazard lights were on. My hazard lights were on. He said, well, that's what it was. He said, as soon as we turned the car on, the hazard lights were already flashing. So those got turned on somehow. And that when those being on without the car running, that's still energy, and that will wear out the battery, especially if you didn't use the car. He said probably the car, you know, the battery would probably keep that charge for about 3 or 4 hours, and then it will die. So some way, somehow, my hazard lights got turned on. And the car sat in the garage, and we didn't see it, and the battery died. So now another mystery, helpful in knowing that it was the hazard lights that caused the draining, but not helpful in that I didn't turn the hazard lights on. There's no way I turned the hazard lights on. In fact, when I was in the car and the hazard lights were on while the car was starting, the guy says, turn off the hazard lights. Immediately, I didn't, right off the top of my head, I couldn't even find the hazard light button. Because I used them so infrequently that I didn't even know where the hazard button was. So how would I have turned them on? And why would I have turned them on in my garage when I'm putting the car away for the evening? So the only thing I could think of, which really didn't make total sense to me, but we knew the hazard lights were on. So that was a fact. Once again, now we get into my Columbo Sherlock Holmes mode of deductive reasoning. Let's gather all the facts. Whether we understand why or how, we know the hazard lights were on, and it was the hazard lights that caused the draining of the battery. So now we have to deduce and figure out how did those hazard lights get on. Now, the only thing that I could possibly deduct was that when I was turning my car off, you pushed a little button. The hazard light button is above it to the right on the dashboard. It's not exactly in front of it. But it's in the vicinity. So the only thing that I could deduce at this point was somehow, for some reason, when I went to shut the car off or when I was leaving or after as I got up to get out of the car, I did have a little satchel, a little bag. Something grazed that button, whether it was my elbow moving out of the car or the bag as I grabbed the car from the passenger seat and moved out to get out of the driver's seat. or as I pushed the button to end, you know, to stop the car. But I'm saying to myself, but I would have seen those hazard lights. You know, especially if I would have hit the button, I would have seen the so it had to have been when I was out of the car. So maybe it was in that split second when I grabbed the bag, maybe the bag, because I would have seen the reflection of those hazard lights, either in the front of me, on the front of the wall of my garage, or as I was walking out of my garage, I would have clicked, you know, when I locked the car, I would have seen the lights going. So this was still a mystery. Even though we figured out the cause, we didn't figure out how those lights got on. And so it's been about, you know, 3 or 4 days, and still bugs me, but, you know, it's one of those mysteries. We know what happened, we don't know how. Well, last night at about 9 o'clock, the garage the garage is not connected to the house. It's a detached garage. So if you look out the back window of the kitchen, you see the garage and you see the yard. And so, you know, just as a precaution that you always should take, you know, and I do this too, you know, you just always kind of look in the yard. Is anything strange going on? Is there a light on? You know, it's just a reflexive kind of move. You know that nothing's wrong, but you still look. You know all the lights are out in the yard. You know that the garage door is closed. You know that, but you look anyway as a little, you know, sign of precaution. Well, my wife said about 9 o'clock, she goes, there's a light flashing through the window of the garage, the side window. She said, there's a light flashing in the garage. Now, of course, you know, we have the automatic garage closer, and sometimes if there's an electrical kind of jolt or surge, that light will flash. You have to reset the garage door opener. So, you know, it did rain earlier in the day, and I thought, well, maybe there was some kind of a power surge or something in the garage. You know, it's got its own electric. So I said, but this is weird. So I open up the garage door. I did use the car yesterday. No problems. I open the garage door. The hazard lights are flashing again. What the heck is going on? Why are those hazard lights on again? And thankfully, my wife looked out the window just as a kind of natural precautionary thing and saw this, because once again, if those hazard lights were allowed to go on all night, the next day my car would be dead and I would be again perplexed. So now, thankfully, she noticed that at some point while they were still flashing, before the battery was dead, out of pure luck at 9 o'clock in the evening. So I go into the car and shut the hazards off. But now I'm saying, once again, why are my hazards seemingly going on by themselves? I certainly this time know for a fact that I did not turn on my hazards. And earlier in the evening, I looked out as just a natural looking, and there was no lights flashing in my garage. So I did not leave those on. That was a fact. Once again, in deducting here, collect your facts. So now I know I did not turn on the hazards yesterday. Know that for a fact. Fact. Sometime between when I used the car at 4 in the afternoon, when I got done using the car about 4 or 5 in the afternoon, between 4 and 5 and 9, the hazards turned on. Probably even after that, because I know I looked when it was dark out and saw the garage door was closed and didn't see any flashing lights, at maybe 7 or 8. So sometime in the last hour and a half, for some reason, the hazard lights went on. Nobody broke into the garage. the car's hazard lights are going on, seemingly by themselves. It is truly a Sherlock Holmes mystery at this point. The case, what could we call it? The case of the flashing lights. Why is this? Why are these hazards going on? When I go into the car, because now the car's thankfully, you know, as I said, you know, we're not in a dead battery situation. So I get my car keys, open up with the fob, open the door, I hit the button, which now I know where the hazard light button is because I've just been through this 4 days ago, and here we are again. In the midst of my aggravation and my befuddlement, I notice something. This is where my deduction comes in. And that's why Elton Jim and Elton Jamie make a good team in terms of you know, figuring out mysteries. She thankfully was observant enough to notice that there was a flashing light in the garage. So she gets full credit, no doubt. She was the key here because I would not have checked that again. Who knows how long those lights would have gone on. If I didn't look again, the battery would have died. No lights would have been flashing, obviously, if nobody looked. I would have gone to the car the next day. It would have been dead again. Bigger mystery. But with the lights flashing and me going to the car and trying to say, what the heck is going on? I had a Sherlock Holmes moment. I don't know about you folks, but, you know, we have the transponder for your tolls. The little transponder, and you know, you're supposed to, you know, glue it. You know, they give you the little Velcro, the double-sided tape, and you're supposed to put it on your windshield, right near your rear view mirror. So if you go through the toll with the transponder, it will register. Well, With the hot sun, and I've had the tape that they gave me or the adhesive never really worked, so I had to put some new Velcro on there. And with the hot sun beating on the windshield, it melts the glue, and regularly in the summer, that transponder falls off. And I find it in all different places. It's on the floor mats. It's on the front seat. Sometimes I'd love to see how this, it goes into the cup holder. But many times it's not, it, you know, it falls off. And now the adhesive has been getting so worn out that it doesn't even take being in the sun. And that day, earlier that day, it had fallen off. I found it in my cup holder again. And I said, you know what? I'm going to have to get new Velcro, and I'm going to have to clean the windshield. I have to get a razor blade and clean that, and then do the whole and put, you know, get new fresh Velcro and new fresh tape, because this is falling off now when it's not even in the heat. Sometimes it's falling off by itself even when it's in the garage. Here's what I believe happened. I like to watch Monk. Did you ever watch the show Monk with Tony Shalhoub when he was a detective, the anal detective, anal retentive directive, detective? Here's what happened, he would always say. Here's how it happened. I believe this is what's happened. This is crazy, but I believe this is how it happened. It's the only thing that makes sense. And it's crazy to the point that it makes perfect sense. Where my transponder is, on the left, little to the left of my rearview mirror, it's directly above where on the dash my button for my hazards are. And that button is out from the dashboard. You have to push it in for it to go on. So it does lean a little out. I believe that my transponder fell, hit the dashboard, or fell and somehow on its way down, because I found the transponder underneath the driver's, you know, on the driver's side, on my driver's mat, right underneath the steering wheel. So what I believe has happened now, perhaps twice, is that transponder has fallen off, and it's fallen in all crazy places, as I said, in the cup holder, on the dashboards, it was passenger side, the driver's side, you name it. Somehow, when it fell, it either hit something or fell directly, and on its way down to the ground, it touched the hazard light. And that's how the hazard lights turned on by themselves without me knowing or seeing it and drained my battery. Thank you, Watson. You were a key to solving this case. And so now I have to make sure that I secure my transponder so that that will never happen again. But I believe it is no longer the case of the flashing lights. It is the case of the fallen transponder. And welcome back to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. And now we go to the Pop Culture Club with Emily Armonetti. Hello, Emily.
Hello, Jim.
So, yeah, I'm doing good. I'm just once again, I'm playing with my different controls here.
Where is this going?
Yeah, because okay, so now you're fine. When you first came on, you blasted.
Oh man!
But now you sound good. So, what I wanted to talk about today on the Pop Culture Club was something that you had pointed out, which is kind of an interesting little pop culture tidbit. These don't happen all that often, but when they do, it's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. What did you notice about one of the iconic homes in TV history?
Oh, well, so the Brady Bunch house, that this is the house that was used for the exterior shots.
Right, so that was a set. The inside was always a set.
The inside was a set, but the exterior shots of the house, which, you know, when they come in and out of scenes and whatever, you know, they always show the house. And of course, it's featured prominently kind of in the, you know, like right after the opening credits. So this house is in Studio City, California. It's a real house, and it was up for sale. It was recently on the market, and there's been a little bit of a, I don't know, you know, if I want to say controversy, but there was a little bit of hijinks happening around the sale of this house. Have you heard about this?
Yeah, well, first we should say that, as Emmy was saying, so this house was in California. It was used as the exterior whenever they would come, you know, as we say in the business, they would use it as an exterior establishment shot.
Yes.
To show that they were going from Sam's butcher shop back right. to the house.
Yes, they're home now.
And they would, and you hear so they would have the transition, and of course they would show the kind of sky up, you know, the overhead view of the home, and then you would hear da 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 da.
Yes, there was always kind of
the nice little quiet calming
music.
Yeah, the quiet calming music as a little segue from, you know, the boisterous, you know, as I said, either Sam's butcher or the high school, or, you know, Alice was with her other maid friends at the grocery store. But then
housekeeper.
That's right, housekeeper. Right, she wasn't a maid. Hazel earlier was a maid, but by the 70s they were called housekeepers. But so there would always be this transition, this establishment shot, if you will, to let the audience know that we are now going back to the Brady home, and there would be this overhead shot, and you'd hear da 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 da, and they would of course show the kitchen, and there was Carol getting all the lunch. Bags
the
ready.
Lunch is ready.
Yeah, all the lunch is ready.
The assembly line.
Yeah, exactly. Or, you know.
If you have six kids, that's what you have to do.
Or, once again, Alice, you know, vacuuming. Or, you know, they would go to the nice little office that Mike had with his drafting table. Or yes. We'd go up to the girls' room with the three beds or the bunk bedroom of the boys. And even though we saw the bathroom in the Brady home, we never saw a toilet.
No.
You never?
No. That would be...
Yeah.
Yeah, that would just not be right.
You never saw...
Very tacky.
Never saw a toilet in the 70s. And I was even surprised, if you remember, Mr. and Mrs. Brady had a big king-size bed.
Yeah, they did. They had a big room. I mean, way bigger room than the exterior of the house could even accommodate.
Yeah, I wonder.
There's a whole thing. We got to come on to that because there's a whole thing about.
Oh, yeah. Well,
house made no sense. But
well, not only did a house make no sense, but I don't know if you know this because I didn't see this mentioned in a lot of the stories that I read about it. Now, the house was very distinctive. It sort of had this. On the left side, on that overhead shot that you always see of the Brady house, on the left side, that's where the front door was, and there was kind of an angled roof.
Yeah, it was like a split level.
Yeah.
It's like a split level, yeah.
But here's a little tidbit that I don't know, and especially nowadays, the people writing this story were probably all millennials who do not know this tidbit. If they did know it, they didn't put it in. But me being a longtime pop culture fan, and I'm assuming you know this too, what I'm going to say. Maybe you don't. But did you know that when they took that overhead shot, to your point about making the house, at least with all these rooms that they had in that house, especially there was an upstairs because that's where all the bedrooms were.
Yeah.
That house did not have an upstairs like that.
Right. Well, you're talking about, the exterior.
So did you know that they actually superimposed a second floor?
I knew that they superimposed a window, but
no.
I didn't know there was anything. No, so, but the shot though, no, if you look at the house, which I think is the house they show in the overhead shot, it still doesn't make sense with the interior because when you look at the house, clearly, the upstairs is on the left side if you're facing the house. But when you walk into the front door of the house, and you remember this, you know, they had a small entryway. And then the room you walk into just beyond that is kind of a living room area. And then the stairs leading up
But here's what I want to tell you. Go back and watch the show and watch when they have that establishment shot, because the picture that you saw of the house now, there is a flat roof on the right side.
Yeah.
And there is the kind of vaulted roof on the left.
On the left. Yes.
But when you see the establishment shot on the show, you will see on that open, what is now when you get a shot of the real house, with the one side of the roof completely open, you will see a whole addition on there.
Really?
You will see that.
And
if you look close, I mean, most of the time when they show that overhead shot, it's so fast, it's so brief that you don't even notice. But if you look close, especially with 70s, technology for visuals on television, you will see that it is superimposed on that roof. There is an addition, and that so that on that roof of that house, there are two big blocks on that roof, not just the one side and then the flat roof.
See, in my mind's eye, the house, and you know, just after the credits, it looks like the photos of the house.
Was superimposed because they must have realized.
Yeah,
there's an upstairs.
This doesn't work.
Exactly
right.
What you're saying is that the stairs there has to be another, protrusion on that roof.
Right, which makes you wonder what kind of a show were they running here. I mean, did they build the sets before they figured out what exterior?
Well,
I do know that they chose that home for a reason because, like, a lot of people have been like, come on, are we supposed to believe that an architect like lived in that house? But actually they said they wanted it to be a place where realistically an architect, it could be an architect's home, but it also had to be relatable to the middle class.
Right. Yeah.
So
it was like a so it couldn't be overly luxurious, but it had to be big enough. It had to have some style points, to your point, because it was an architect's home. And apparently, if you watch early on, Mike did design that house.
Oh, yes.
That's what they say.
Of course he did.
So it had to be big enough, to handle these six kids and a dog and Alice.
Yes.
Because Alice had her own room, too.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, once again, if you look at the exterior shots of this home, I mean, there's no way all this stuff. And remember, Mike had an office.
That's what I mean. Mike had an office.
Table.
Yes.
Alice had her quarters.
And then there was a huge kitchen. And then there was a room off the kitchen.
Yes. Yes.
The TV room.
Yeah. But that room, it's so funny because I was flipping through. So there, you can actually see the photos. I mean, I don't know now that the house is sold, I don't know how much of this stays online, but they had photos of the home today. And it was really weird because I almost had to look it up because I was like, I'm pretty sure they didn't film on location. But the backyard of the house looks almost identical to the one they used on the set, which was a set because that's
Joe Namath was back there throwing passes to Peter and Bobby. That was styrofoam.
When Marcia got the football it was definitely on AstroTurf.
Yeah, when Peter exploded his volcano.
His volcano. So
when Bobby was hanging to break the record on the swing set.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So the room that leads out to the backyard, there is a room in that house that looked almost identical to that room.
Oh, really?
Which is kind of weird. But
oh, that's cool.
Like the wood paneling. Yeah, walls. Yeah. I mean, it still does. I think I don't think these people have updated this house.
Yeah.
Much at all. But
Here's a point to your point that drives me crazy because. I think, as I said, I think at least they made an effort by superimposing this addition on the roof to give this the sense that this house was bigger and could hold all these secret passageways.
That probably wasn't easy back then in the 70s either. I mean, now you could do that. Like, no CGI, no problem.
Yeah, but go back and just go on YouTube and watch an episode. And when they do that establishment shot of the home, just look on the right side and you will see that there's a whole addition on that roof as opposed to the picture that was being, used now as the house was sold. But here's a perfect example to what you're saying and what drives me crazy and many other TV aficionados who notice this stuff. So you made a very good point. You said, well, did they build the sets before they chose the exterior of these houses? Because in reality, the house interior wise should match the exterior of the house to fit these different architecture in the rooms. Correct?
Right.
Yes.
Right. Yes.
Well, here's one that once again drives me up a wall, and I've heard other people mention this, so I'm not the only one. But I noticed this as a little kid, not even as an adult. 30 years later,
right?
Watching reruns and inspecting every little nook and cranny of a contradiction, because now you can, because when they were making these shows, first of all, they never knew that these shows would be lasting 60 years later, and people would be watching them five times a day and know everything. They were just filming these. Okay. Next scene, let's go. They weren't thinking of continuity in any way, shape or form.
No,
because half the time Sam the Butcher, was also a robber. I mean, the same act.
I think also one thing that I guess we have to keep in mind about some of these inconsistencies is that I don't think they ever imagined back then any of these TV shows.
Well, that's what I said.
Airing more than one
time.
Yeah.
They never figured that these shows were going to
high rotation for 30 years.
No,
now.
They never thought they were going to be lasting on reruns for 60 years. People are going to be watching these again. These were one shot deals.
No, they did not know that I was going to watch the mom's favorite bass episode like 27 times in my lifetime.
They would never know that you would see Johnny Bravo and know all the words to "When It's Time to Change" or the silver platters. Warren Mulaney's name, who was one of Marsha's boyfriends.
Right.
Or that one of Marsha's friends, who was supposedly an ugly duckling, used to live in Seattle.
Wasn't that wasn't the one that was played by Rita Wilson, was it? Rita Wilson, I believe Rita Wilson was on an episode of The Brady Bunch, and I think she either played Marsha's friend or maybe like someone Greg was dating.
Okay, well, that couldn't have been, because the one that I'm thinking about, there was this girl, I can't remember what her name was, but she was... They tried to make her dowdy looking.
Yeah, she was.
But she was.
Did they put a pair of glasses?
Yeah, I mean, she was gorgeous to begin with. I didn't even know that Marsha was on that episode. That's how pretty she was. I didn't even know that Marsha was even on it. Because I was just staring at the other girl. And then all of a sudden, you know, Marsha does the Pygmalion thing. But so here's the thing that drives me crazy. And once again, you can Google this, and this is real easy. Go on YouTube. So as I said, I noticed this as a little kid, not, 40 years later watching these reruns and saying, how does this work? At the beginning of All in the Family, right, we have Archie and Edith singing the song, right? Boy, yeah. The way Glenn Miller played,
Yes, iconic.
But then, as they sing it, they show footage of Queens, New York, mm-hmm. where the bunkers live.
Mm-hmm.
And the camera quickly pans like you're driving in a car down the working class streets of Queens. And as the song ends and they sing, "Those were the days," the camera stops at a certain house and zooms in on a front door. And you're to assume that
is their front
that's
door.
The bunker house.
That would be the logical conclusion.
Right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep.
When you watched Archie Bunker, and they used that front door liberally on the show, and many times they even used the front stoop, as Archie calls it. And there's actually a porch in the front. There is no way that the house that they show, that they zoom in on,
right,
is the bunker house. There's no porch. There's no wooden door. It's almost like it's almost like it's a townhome in that there's another door next to it. Like there's another house connected.
Is that where the Jeffersons live?
I don't know. I mean, it is so not the bunker house. It's not even close.
Not even close.
At least the Bradys, superimpose this other addition on the open roof to make it look okay. We got to make this house look bigger. But this wasn't even close. If you watch just go to YouTube and watch the opening sequence of Archie Bunker of All in the Family, and you'll see where they zoom in on this house. And if you watch an episode, when you see the door open, you'll see this whole porch. It's not even close. Drives me up a wall. Then, so that drove me up a wall when I was 7 years old, I noticed that.
Right. Yeah, well, that's very observant. That's good for a 7 year old.
Yeah, well, then the spinoff of Archie, of All in the Family, was Maude with Beatrice Arthur. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that's where she worked with Rue McClanahan, and that's when they first got their chemistry, and then they went on to do the Golden Girls together.
Yeah, of course.
Because Rue McClanahan was on Maude. But anyway, so since it was a spinoff of All in the Family, because Maude, in theory, was Edith's cousin, and she actually came on a couple of episodes on All in the Family, and that's when she came in on All in the Family, then they were like, wait a minute, this is kind of a cool character, but we'll give her own life, in Tuckahoe. But that's where she came from. And so they used a similar opening in that they had and then there's Maude song,
Right.
Lady Godiva was a freedom rider. She didn't care if the whole world looked. Joan of Arc with the Lord behind her. She was a sister who really cooked. Those are the lyrics.
I never watched Maude.
Yeah, Maude, I think was a little before your time.
Yeah.
But it's still on reruns. But I used to watch Maude because it was, I used to love All in the Family. But anyway, they used the same kind of opening where they would use the, they used the New York skyline and a car driving to the suburbs from New York. And then they would go down the street and they would stop at Maude's house and they would zoom in on, it was the same, you know, theme of the same kind of shot. And that didn't even match.
They must just use, back then, maybe they just used like stock footage.
I know. Like, but the All in the Family, I mean, the Maude one is kind of close. You could maybe make a, you know, an argument for it. And once again, nobody was expecting anybody to watch these with any kind of a close eye. You know what I mean? To your point, they're just like, hey, go out and, you know, I'm sure for All in the Family, especially in 1971 when it started, hey, go out to Queens. Find a real kind of working class house and just zoom in on it and that'll be the exterior and who cares.
Right.
And that's what they, and then when they started to build the house, you know, the build the sets, they're like, well, you know what? We might do something on the porch, give them a porch, you know, give them a door. And then, you know, but they,
well, they needed that. They needed that though for certain scenes.
Like
they would sit out on the porch.
Exactly. So, yeah, but there was clearly no continuity. There was no, they didn't care about the opening. Who cares? Nowadays, as I said, we're able to examine this stuff so closely with reruns. So, so, okay. So that's part one, the Brady House.
Right. Oh, wait. First, I have to tell you that I have an update, which is, so Rita Wilson.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Yeah. So, so yes, the information superhighway tells me that.
The WWW?
Yeah, the World Wide Web. So I got on the World Wide Web.
Nice.
And
how were you able to, when did you get on? Like 3 days ago? Did you have to somehow enter it?
No, just now. How amazing is that?
Really?
So let me tell you something. This is interesting. In Rita Wilson's Wikipedia entry, the very first thing that's mentioned in her career section.
Is that?
Is, yes, her career began with a guest appearance on The Brady Bunch in the 1972 episode titled Greg's Triangle. And she played Pat Conway. One of the candidates running against the Marsha for head.
I totally.
How dare she?
I remember Pat Conway because he invited her over.
Oh, yes.
And
Marsha was not happy.
And I think she was even doing Cheers or something.
Well, how dare he?
Yeah.
I mean, who, first of all, who has the gall
to run against Marsha? He was mad at her. He was mad at Marsha for some reason.
Yeah, but you have to have some nerve to run against Marsha Brady for head cheerleader.
Yeah, okay? Because he was even saying, when I'll have to go back and try to watch it, because I remember him now going, so he had her in the yard doing Cheers.
Yeah.
And Marsha couldn't hear them. He's like, louder, Pat. She was either in the living room or in the yard. He's like, louder, louder.
She was probably doing homework, you know.
I don't know if she was in the yard or she may have been in the living room. He's like, louder, Pat. I remember him calling her Pat. Oh my God, is that funny?
Oh, the nerve.
Yeah. So anyway, the plot thickens. So now they announced that this Brady Bunch house was for sale.
Yeah, so the house is for sale.
Yeah, you could go on like you did. You went online. You could any house.
Look through the photos.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, an interesting twist came about because another pop. I don't want to say icon, but I guess to some he is.
Oh, sort of, yeah.
But another celebrity got involved and wanted to buy the house.
Yes. Well, and also, like, I mean, so I feel like Lance Bass was coming from a place of he's a huge Brady fan. He certainly has the money to buy it, right? The house was listed, I think, for $1.8 million, I believe, which is kind of it makes you wonder how long the sellers had been in the home, which would maybe give you a sense of how much they paid for it. Like, they've been in there since the 70s.
Oh, that house probably cost $20,000.
Oh, God, yeah.
If that.
So first of all, people were a little worried that because they were afraid that some developers would buy it and tear it down.
Right, yeah.
So there was that. And then, like, Lance Bass came along and bid on the house and then thought, and this was in the news that he had done this, and then he announced that he was informed that he had the winning bid. Right, he claims that he was told that by the agent.
Right,
but then He was gazumped.
Yeah.
You know what that is?
Somebody came and, yeah, they gave it to someone else.
So then, right, so after he has his whole celebration about how he's bought the house and he's, like, announced, it's right in the news, like, Lance Bass is the winning bid. And, you know, and I think, and again, I think his intention was, like, he was going to make sure that the you know, that the house was preserved and that it was not going to be torn down. And so, but then he finds out from the agent, oh, nope, sorry.
Yeah.
But there's a corporate buyer who is willing to pay any price for the house. And so now he is heartbroken. He posts this very, like, really sad, actually, post on, I think it was on Instagram, where he had a photo of him in front of the house with his friend sort of celebrating having the winning bid. And then he kind of told the story of what had happened, and basically he was saying he was heartbroken, and not only that, but he, I guess, feels like he was used to drive up the price.
Right.
Of the house.
Yeah, like, because there was this interest of a celebrity. Mm-hmm. Because do we know how much the other people paid?
Well, we don't know, but we know who bought the house. So it was just revealed this week.
Yeah.
Just in the last day or so, I think. Because I think this all actually went down in the last couple of days. So it now has been revealed that the buyer was actually HGTV.
Yeah.
And their plan is to restore the house to its 1970s glory. And this was actually announced on the corporate earnings call, of all things, of their parent company. So, I mean, you just know there's going to be a whole TV show.
So do you think
following the restoration of this.
Are they going to restore it to the way that the Bradys had it?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, that's all that they said on the call, or at least as far as I've read in the news. But you just know there's going to be a whole show, and it's going to be a whole thing. I mean, I just don't see any other reason for them to do it.
I mean, even if they paid $2 million for it, it's a total write-off.
Right.
You know, it's no big deal. And the publicity that they're going to get now for that show. And like I said, don't be surprised now if they do that and they restore the house. And I would think if they're going to do that, they need to restore that house to the way the Bradys had it.
Well, you would think that they would, because also, you know, in addition to maybe doing a show up following the restoration, I mean, they could, who knows? I mean, I don't know what this, I know where Studio City is, but I don't know what the neighborhood is like. And I don't even know if they would be able to do this, but I mean, what if they decided to make some kind of a Graceland type thing?
Yeah, like a museum.
To bring tours
to
there. Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, so I don't know. We'll see. I think it's yet to be revealed.
Well, I guarantee
exactly
you.
Exactly what they're going to do. But I think poor Lance Bass, he's not very happy. And he actually said in his post, like, I don't know what the laws are in California about this kind of thing. But then the agency, the seller's agent, kind of came back and said, like, they essentially acknowledged what he posted, but they pretty much said, like, because of the interest in this house, the winning bid had to be, like, sealed and had to be, you know, so, like, I guess what they're implying is, no, you did not. Could only have the winning bid if you had the highest bid and it was sealed in this way, because that's how we were doing this. And these people had the higher bid and we have an obligation to our client.
Yeah. Well, he's probably got a little sour grapes, too. I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
But the funny thing is, so to my earlier point, then, if they are going to try to restore the house to the Bradys, you know, specs, then don't be surprised if they build that addition.
Oh, right. Well, they would have to.
Yeah.
That's the only way.
They would have to. So I don't know if they, I mean, to me, it doesn't make any sense to buy the Brady house and not fix it up that way. I mean, you could, you know, to fix it up in a 70s fashion doesn't make any sense, because who cares? It's got to look that, and don't we, you know what, we even forgot about the dining room. Remember, the dining room was off the living room.
Right.
That was a huge, that living room, dining room, that house. I mean, I don't even know how. Once again, now the more I think about it, that house the way they had it was so huge.
Could never accommodate that stuff.
So that will be interesting. If they just 70s it up with, you know, orange and avocado colors and, you know, some plaids here and there and some funky, you know, psychedelic beads and, you know, some goofy chairs, then who right. cares? I mean, to me, what makes that an interesting show to watch is, okay, here's what this house really looks like, but we are going to do whatever we can to make it as look at as much as the interior as it did on the show. So we have to build Mike's office, and we have to build that right. very nice, very cool fireplace that looked cool, you know, right in there by the living room.
Yeah, they did have that
fireplace. Yeah, the cool fireplace yeah. and the big stairway going up there. You know.
That's another question. Is there even a chimney on the exterior home? I mean, what?
Yeah, so I guess we should feel a little sad for Lance Bass.
Well, I think what he said was, here's the story of a shady Brady.
Oh, so yeah.
The whole thing was a little
Lance
shady.
Lance getting a little bitchy.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw
what he stamped over the photo of his, you know, his joyous celebration. Yeah. But
I saw Lance one time at an Elton John concert. I was sitting. I was sitting right next to him practically.
Oh wow.
He was I was at the end of a row and he was in the next section on the end of the row right across from me.
Well, I wasn't into boy bands. That was that whole thing all was yeah. kind of slightly after my time. I think like New Kids on the Block
right.
became big. I was like in high school and it was sort of just missed it by a few years, right. which is fine with me. But and then he was in, I guess, NSYNC, right? And they came a few years later.
Right.
But so I was never really into him, but he does pop up in a lot of all these reality shows. Like he's popping up on the Kardashians.
Yeah, no, he's definitely a key member of the gay mafia. There's no question about that.
Yes, yes.
Well, I'll tell you, it's going to be very interesting to see that. So HG, which they do all those kind of rehab shows.
HGTV. That's yeah. Right.
So yeah. that is, I mean, to be honest with you, if you're really a fan of the show, and if they do it right, it's almost better that they bought it than he did. Because if I know he's got money, but he doesn't have endless funds. And if they are going to do this for a show that they feel can really make some money, you know, and sell a lot of ads for, then they could really do an excellent job on rehabbing that house and making it look like the Brady House more than Lance Bass could, probably given his funds. So even though I feel sorry because a true fan didn't get it to some
right.
extent,
right.
In the bigger picture of it, if you really want that house to be the house and look like the house that the Brady's had, you're probably better off having a place like HGTV owning it and really doing it and having the funds to spend on it. And do it right. So,
well, that and, I mean, on the bright side, we know it's not going to be torn down. So
right.
There's that.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah, very good. Well, Emily, once again, you pulled a rabbit out of a hat.
Once again, some really hard-hitting.
Hard-hitting stuff. And the key to this is the Rita Wilson tidbit.
Right, yes.
Pat, what was it, Conway?
Yeah, Pat Conway.
I am, when this ends, I am going on the World Wide Web, on the YouTube.com.
Yeah.
And I am going to look up that episode.
The episode is called Greg's Triangle.
Greg's Triangle. Because I'll never forget, he goes, come on, a little louder, Pat. And she's like jumping around, you know, and doing all the cheers and everything.
Yeah.
And Marcia's so mad because she knows that, you know, she knows who Pat is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's so funny. Well, once again, thank you, Emily. We will talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks, Jim.
Take care. And so that ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted. Hope you will continue to scour the World Wide Web and click on Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Because it is the only podcast from the end of the web to your screen.